Okay, Matthew chapter 15, if you will. Matthew chapter 15, and we begin in verse 1. It says, "Then came to Jesus scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, Why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread. But he answered and said unto them, Why do ye also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, Honor thy father and thy mother, and he that curseth father and mother, let him die the death. But ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, It is a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest profit it by me, and honor not his father or his mother, he shall be free. Thus have ye made the commandment of God of none effect by your tradition, ye hypocrites. Well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, This people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And he called the multitude and said unto them, Hear and understand. Not that which goeth into the mouth defileth a man, but that which cometh out of the mouth, this defileth a man." I'll just remind you that the very first verse tells us that the Pharisees and the scribes were from Jerusalem. And I'll just remind you that that where Jesus is, he just healed the sick in Gennesaret. And so we're assuming he's still in that location, which is just to the northeast of the Sea of Galilee. We're assuming he's still in that area. The Bible didn't tell us any differently. And so this delegation of scribes and Pharisees have come from Jerusalem all the way to where he is in that location. The Bible is not clear on why, but it's very likely that they were there to discredit him. They're motivated to bring him down at this point. And this particular text points out how how they're coming at Jesus here by basically pointing out that his disciples had failed to wash their hands before eating, which by their own admission violates their traditions. They didn't say it violates the word of God. It violates the traditions of the Jews. We've already spoken at great length about the difference between Jewish tradition and the actual word of God or law of God, okay? So we're not going to revisit that. But now in verse 10 and 11, Jesus gives a principle to this multitude regarding the subject of defilement. We'll read verse 10 again, and it says, "And he called the multitude and said unto them, Hear and understand." Essentially what he's saying there is listen carefully, pay close attention. These phrases were often used when a message had great importance. He would say, "Verily, verily," or something along these lines that he says here, just to say, "Hey, what I'm about to say is deep and important. You need to pay close of attention." This verse is not implying that what he's about to say is going to be hard to understand, but rather it's saying that it's just going to be difficult to be accepted. It's going to be something hard to swallow, so to speak, okay? And that's usually the way the Word of God is. It's not complicated. God doesn't complicate things. He really keeps things pretty simple and easily understood. It's usually the willingness to accept, the willingness to embrace those things that's difficult. That's the hard part, and Jesus knew that. And so he makes that statement in verse 10. He says, "Hear and understand." And then in verse 11, he goes on to say, not that which goeth into the mouth defileth a man, but that which cometh out of the mouth, this defileth a man. This truth was really a simple truth based upon common knowledge and common experience. Spiritual defilement is a matter of the inside. What's going on the inside of a person? What a person eats cannot contaminate them morally. Food can't defile a person is basically what he's saying. What matters is what's going on in the interior already without the input of something else. What's going on in the heart? The religious Jews could not grasp that truth. I know we've rehearsed this multiple times, and we'll probably multiple more times as we go forward and continue to look at the Pharisees and the scribes and their attitudes and behaviors. They constantly focused on outward actions. They were just, that was their thing, to the neglect of what was going on the inside. Washing your hands before you eat, that may deal with germs, but it doesn't do anything for what's going on the inside of you if your heart is wrong. What's on the inside, as we know, is always going to come out to the outside at some point, and it's going to reveal that the defilement was already there. Okay? This principle deals not only with the words. Jesus speaks of the mouth, okay? It's not dealing just with the words, but it also deals with our actions in general. Behaviors and attitudes are a part of it. But the mouth is the most dominant revealer of what's going on the inside. Again, our actions and attitudes are something, but usually if there's hatred, anger, deception, jealousy, envy, these sort of things, if they're carried around within, that's usually something that's going to come out in our words through the mouth. That's the most common thing. And it will eventually. Not usually, it will eventually. It might be in the privacy of our home. It might be in the privacy of just us and our best friend. But if we've got defilement going on in here, it will surface in words in some capacity. Some more than others, okay? But this principle would have been a very difficult thing for the scribes and Pharisees, the religious Jews, to swallow. Because form was everything to them. It was all about externals. It was all about doing this and not doing that and checking all the boxes. Their dietary laws were sacred to them. All these rules regarding food and what could be eaten and what couldn't be eaten, and they were just important to them because those were things they could check the boxes with. It was manual, if you will. It was something that you could determine you could not eat or eat, either way. It's something you could just bow your neck and accomplish, okay? Didn't have anything to do with the internal. And it's important to realize that the origin of all their dietary restrictions is found in the law, okay? If you look at the law, you go back to the book of Leviticus, it's not unfounded what they're talking about here. There were dietary laws. It's just that they had taken them and they had carried them so far and they had become their traditions. And they had actually not just taken the laws that were there, but they had added more to it with their traditions. And they missed the purpose of these laws to start with. The Orthodox Jews, and in fairness to them, they looked at the book of Leviticus and the five books of the law, and they got many of their ceremonies and many of their restrictions because they were originally given by God. But they were given by God as an expression of their covenant relationship, an expression of keeping them having them stand out from the rest of the world. I can't think of the term I'm looking for here. Anybody can help me out if you'd like. But keeping them unique and an identity that was separate from the rest of the world. And so these things, these rituals and ceremonies for the priesthood, there were rituals and ceremonies regarding the sacrificial system. There were certain animals that were declared as clean and unclean. Preparation of certain foods were prescribed all in the Word of God. There were certain things that could be touched and not touched, and certain physical conditions that were make a person considered clean or unclean. All of these things, the examples could go on and on, but we have to recognize that these were given as expectations God had for his people to set them apart. They were not ever intended to be something of spiritual merit to accomplish something. You see, they weren't designed to be duties that you carry out to merit favor with God, okay? They were things that would set God's people apart from the rest of the world. And if you read closely in the Old Testament law, the violations of these things were not severe penalties that came with a violation of like these ceremonial laws and dietary laws and all of this. It really was just that it would render a person unfit for certain worship ceremonies or certain social activities. In other words, for 7 days they had to avoid certain things. So it's not, God's not making a big deal of saying, this is a horrendous sin if you don't eat right or do right, you see. And again, it was just, those laws were given to set them apart from the rest of the world. And we have to be reminded that these laws were given immediately after Israel had been, freed or from the bondage of Egypt. They had just been brought out of 400 years of bondage in Egypt when the law was given to them. And what were the Egyptians? Pagan, idolatrous, morally corrupt. They were a depraved society. So in spite of the Hebrew people during that 400 years having held on to their identity as God's people all that time where they were in Egypt, which is miraculous in itself, but they also had been under the influence for 400 years of a pagan society with no word of God to turn to. There was no word of God when they were in Egypt. None of it had been written, okay? And so though in their hearts, the Jews during those four centuries still laid claim to Jehovah as their God, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They knew that. That was passed down from generation to generation. But still, their understanding of who God was still very limited because there had been no revelation. It wasn't until they had been liberated from Egypt and went into the desert and Moses went up into the mountain, Sinai, before they ever got any written word of God. What was the very first written word of God? Ten Commandments, written in stone by God's own finger, okay? That's the first written word of God. We don't often think about that. But up until that point, it had really just been God instructing certain people, certain particular leaders of his people, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and them, and really coming to them personal and instructing them and giving them certain directions regarding what he wanted to accomplish with his people. But they didn't have all the information about God and who he was and his character and how he operated. It had all just been what they had been passed on verbally, okay? Now they've got the Ten Commandments. Once they come down off, Moses comes down the second time off Mount Sinai with the tablets, and then they ultimately get the law, and then the law is all they have for a long time, okay? And so God when he gave these ceremonial laws and these dietary laws and all of this stuff, it was during a time that his people had a limited knowledge of his character and ways. So in a very real sense, all of those laws in Leviticus and all of that were, I'm not going to say they're geared towards, but they lended towards helping his people understand who he was and what he wanted for them. Helping these people that were totally aloof to his character and his holiness and all of these things to begin to understand what cleanness was and what defilement was and these sort of things, and to just help him, to help them understand who their father was. They knew they had a father in heaven, And they knew, you know, by tradition that he had called them out to be a peculiar people, but they didn't know the details of how to be a peculiar people. And now they do with the Old Testament ceremonial laws, okay? And so nowhere in the Old Testament do we see where all that ceremonial activity, the cleansing, the refraining from certain foods or any of that stuff, we see nowhere where it could save a person and make them right for God. That's what, before God. That's, God never intended for that to be what it was for, okay? It was as it was then, and it is still now, much of the things God expects of us, is a desire to deal with our hearts and desire to have us be a vessel, an instrument that he can work through in this world, okay? But all of the Jewish tradition had focused on, up to this point that we're reading back to our text, had focused on the external, the outside actions, things that couldn't change the heart, things that had nothing to do with forsaking sin or repenting for God. It had to do with just, again, checking the boxes and saying, I did this and I didn't do that. And a person can, by sheer determination, do those things. They don't even have to know God to do those things. A person just can resign that I'm going to do these things and not do these things and not know God. Okay, so you can, as the Jews did, and I'm almost through here. You could still be doing all these traditions and still not have the right heart, which will ultimately reveal itself by our disposition, our attitude, and that's what Jesus says there in verse 11, that the things that come out of a man is what defileth us. So what the Jews are talking about here is empty. It's a hypocritical way to serve God. Instead of pointing people to God and enhancing their faith, like Jesus was, their ideas, their rituals, and all of this enhanced self-reliance, and it enhanced self-righteousness. It was all about them, and this is perfectly displayed here in the actions of the scribes and the Pharisees in this text. And so we have to learn. We don't have what they had at this time. We don't have in Christianity the traditions and all the things. Well, we do have some traditions, but what we have today is very much akin to this sort of thing, is what we commonly refer to as legalism, is getting caught up in the I do's, I do's, and I do's, and I don't, and I don't, and I don't, and thinking somehow we're meriting God's favor by going through those things. Holiness is important, and doing right is important, but it should all be a condition of the heart that drives us to do those things, not a condition that we just determine to do, thinking we're going to gain God's favor by doing so. Okay, I hope I'm clear. I hope I got that across. If not, we'll do it again next Wednesday. Okay, and so, okay, appreciate you guys so very much. And let's go ahead and stand. And hope you'll be praying about the things that we mentioned there. Pray for Debbie Robinson in the morning. Pray for Melanie's son Brandon. And we'll look forward to seeing you back here on Sunday morning. Bring somebody with you, and we'll have a good day, okay? All right. Aaron, will you lead us in prayer, please?